Are some states becoming uninvestable because of politics? And a wave of zoning law changes could have major consequences for investors. You're listening to the Bigger Pockets Daily, where we cover the latest news in real estate and economics. I'm your host, Matt Meir, managing editor of the Bigger Pockets blog, and today's run of stories is really important to your bottom line. So in our first story today, we'll talk about states that are basically becoming completely unapproachable for investors due to their internal politics. And we're going to talk about specifically what you should look for when trying to avoid bad policies that will absolutely crush your cash flow, your appreciation, and your bottom line. So there's really two main points that contribute to the issue with some of these unapproachable, uninvestable, however you want to label it, these states. One, high taxes. High taxes are contributing to population loss. And then two, there are a ton of anti-landlord regulations that are making the environment less than ideal for investors. So we'll start with taxes and population. I think it goes without saying, states like New York and California have state tax burdens that are astronomical. So for instance, if you look at the state tax burden of New York, it's 12%. California is not far behind, around 10.4%. And that tax burden is calculated by the overall state income taxes, plus the average property tax, sales tax, and excise tax. So states like New York and California lead the pack with tax burdens in the 10 to 12% range. Now, compare that to states like Florida and Texas, where tax burdens hover anywhere from 6 to 8%. It's significantly less in the grand scheme of things. And you might think, okay, well, 6 to 12%, like it's only a 6% difference. Is it that crazy? And the thing is like when you're calculating your cash flow and a property tax is a whole percent higher in one state compared to the other, that actually makes a huge difference. Or in a state like Florida where there's no state income tax, that makes a huge difference when April comes around compared to a state like New York. But what this actually, in the grand scheme of things, does to a state is it actually reduces the population. So if we think back to the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of news about how New York, California were losing a ton of people. Now, there's a few reasons for that. One, there was a lot of lockdown information coming out about California and New York that stayed around too long to a lot of people. And in many cases were a little overbearing, and they ended up leaving to go to less overbearing states like Florida and Texas. That was the sort of the political story of 2020. But also, these places were already way too expensive to live in, and pair the pandemic, remote work, it just made more economic sense. And so if you go back to look at all of these states, plot their tax burdens with population change on a chart, you would actually see that tax burden and population change is highly correlated. Now, I will say correlation does not equal causation, but when you have a state like New York with a 12% tax burden also showing a significant decrease in population, especially over the last 4 years, you will see states with the highest tax burdens are losing population, and states with the lowest tax burdens are gaining in population. So in an interview with Bigger Pockets, Alexandra Alvarado with the American Apartment Owners Association said, quote, higher net worth individuals are most likely to move to states with low or no income tax. It may not be the primary reason they are making the move in the first place, but it does influence which states they're moving to. Also, companies that are moving their headquarters to lower tax states also influence migration patterns as their employees tend to move with them. So that's just one example that kind of paints the picture of this story. Now, why does any of this matter, specifically with why population change is a big deal? We're going to toss it to a break and be sure to stick around because even later on, we're going to get into zoning and why that makes a big difference on your bottom line as well.
Okay, almost time for the show. We'll get right into it after this quick break. Meet RentApp, the seamless, secure, free way to collect rent. Built by a team of fintech veterans behind Square and Cash App, Rent App uses ACH bank transfers to deposit funds directly into your account. You don't even need to download anything. Rent App setup is straightforward for renters, and there are no apps for landlords to download. Both get peace of mind with a digital transaction history. That means no more lost checks, managing a dozen different payment apps, or even wondering whether payment was sent. Landlords say Rent App is the most convenient way to collect rent, and we think you'll agree. Rent App, the free and easy way to collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord. Managing your finances used to be a pain. It was either useless apps or overcomplicated spreadsheets. Ugh. But now, with Monarch Money, managing your money is easier than ever. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/bigger. Unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it easy to set up, customize, and use. You can even collaborate with your partner, family, or financial advisor at no extra cost to get a joint view of all your finances. Customize your dashboard, notifications, and budgets with a tap. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show right here will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/bigger. That's monarchmoney.com/bigger for your extended 30-day free trial.
I used to think working from home was the dream, until it wasn't. Between the distractions and the solitude, I was struggling. But then I discovered Industrious Office, and honestly, it's been a game changer. Every day at Industrious feels like stepping into a zone of productivity. The high-speed internet never fails me during crucial moments, and the workspace? It's not only stylish, but designed to boost your focus and creativity. Plus, the daily breakfast and endless coffees are super cool. Meeting other driven professionals right where I work has not just expanded my network, it's inspired me. It's amazing how being around other focused people can push you to achieve more, you know what I mean? If you're looking for a sign to change your workspace, this is it. Check out Industrious by visiting biggerpockets.com/industrious. Then click join now and use the promo code POCKETS to get a free week of co-working when you take a tour. That's biggerpockets.com/industrious and use promo code POCKETS after clicking join now. Experience for yourself how the right environment can change the way you work. Industrious, it's where your best work happens.
Welcome back. So as a recap, we've been talking about how some states are becoming very hard to invest in because of their policies, specifically tax rates and migration patterns. Why does any of this actually matter? Well, it comes down to how population changes impact the supply and demand of a local housing market. For instance, Orlando, Florida, it wasn't nearly as populated when I was growing up there as it is now. Large part because there was a massive influx of migration during the pandemic. People were moving to Orlando because, one, Florida is a tax-free state when it comes to state income tax. And then on top of that, Orlando, you could make the argument, was undervalued. And people moved in, bought up a bunch of houses, and now Orlando has seen pretty significant housing price growth. Might be hard to invest there now, but the fact of the matter is over the last 4 years, it has grown significantly, which is usually a good indication for a housing market. Meanwhile, San Francisco, and I will say San Francisco is still priced over $1 million for the average house. Despite that, it has seen some of the largest raw declines in prices throughout the country. At the peak of the pandemic, San Francisco was $1.6 million for the average house. And that came down to about $1.1 million. So that's a $500,000 loss over a two-year period, which is insane. But if you invested there, say you bought at the height of the pandemic, a $1.6 million investment property, you lost $500,000 over the last 2 years in equity. You're underwater. Your mortgage is underwater, which is obviously very bad. You're also probably not cash flowing. That's a lot of this is due to outbound migration. Less demand for San Francisco, higher supply, prices come down. The opposite is true for Orlando. So as an investor, population might be the single most important metric to pay attention to when you're looking at long-term assets like real estate. Is the population growing? Is it stagnant? Is it declining? That all makes a difference. And then obviously the second factor with why these states and cities are becoming very difficult to invest in is just the simple fact that a lot of them are passing anti-landlord legislation. So I think it's fair to say ultimately that landlords have garnered a lot of hate, especially in the last few years, definitely more than other professions. And in response to the negative rhetoric about landlords, many jurisdictions have made it a priority to make it as hard as possible for investors to invest and operate in their areas. It started with short-term rental bans, the argument being that vacation rentals take up critical housing supply and they push prices up. They prevent would-be homeowners or long-term renters from getting access to housing. And maybe that's a fair argument, but then there's other things like the eviction moratoriums that went on for way longer than they should have. That was probably the beginning of what we now know as the political divide over landlords, and not so much landlords themselves, because many landlords are on both sides of the political spectrum. But outside of the landlord community, there is a clear division over how to approach landlords between left and right. And then we even see today, all eyes are on squatter rights and what legal tenancy is actually defined by. And it's gotten so bizarre that even a landlord recently in New York City was arrested for trying to kick someone out of their home to which they had no right to be in. So all of these issues, with the exception of the short-term rental ban, as I think there's, once again, a very plain economic rationale for that in certain markets, all of this comes down to ideology. Cities with dense regulations effectively prop up a tenant's defense in any sort of legal case beyond a reasonable threshold. So, for instance, I think it's fair to say that the United States is built on capitalism. It's built on business, very pro-business environment. Yet cities with dense regulations are effectively making it very easy for a tenant to beat the landlord in a legal case. On top of that, it's sort of a conundrum for many of these cities, because at the same time that they are making it extremely difficult for landlords to operate, they're also crying out for more affordable housing. They suggest that quality housing is a right, just as pure as a First Amendment right to speech. And they deny the validity of rent price increases every year to keep up with inflation. But yet they're also making it very difficult for investors to operate there. So my question is, how do you get more affordable housing? How do you get quality housing? And how do you make sure that this is a profitable business strategy unless you make it easy for landlords to operate there? Doesn't make sense. But by doing this, doing all of this bizarre stuff, landlords don't want to invest in these areas, especially the areas that need the most help. And I want to be clear, I'm not suggesting that everything landlords do are free of sin, I know that there are certainly bad apples out there. But unfortunately, too many landlords are given the description of greedy and uncaring. But look, to a large extent, most landlords are doing good work, and most of them are looking for financial independence, financial freedom through real estate. And that's largely what Bigger Pockets exists for. We are trying to build and foster a positive community of landlords that are all doing good work on their journey to financial freedom. So why does it matter? It's simple. Some places are becoming so unhealthy for investors, whether through the law, through market dynamics, all of which brought on by the internal politics of the area they're operating in, that it's just smarter to avoid them altogether. There's deals in every market, but this is the reality that we're living in, where you have to really pay attention to what a city feels about your profession before you actually go there. And this flows right into our next story today. Now, there's another piece to the investing puzzle that varies from state to state, city to city, and is also somewhat political, but not nearly as political as the other stuff. And that brings us to our next story, which is about zoning laws. So zoning laws across the country are undergoing some massive changes that could seriously impact housing prices. So the main points to note here are that on average, American cities have about 75% of its land zoned for single-family homes. This, quite obviously, has led to a severe undersupply of property. Meanwhile, some cities like Palisades Park in New Jersey and Minneapolis, Minnesota, have rezoned for more, quote, light-touch multifamily development, like duplexes and quadplexes. When they say light touch, what they mean is not massive apartment complexes, but more of these smaller duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes. And as a result, these locations that have implemented these changes have not only seen more affordable housing prices, but they've also seen their property tax rates decrease. Why? More people in more properties mean that the governments in these areas have more properties to tax, sometimes to a 2 to 3 times more degree. So why does this matter? Well, because zoning makes a big difference in how a city develops, and especially on how they're currently priced and the amount of supply that those cities have. So if we look back, zoning has been around forever. And when I say forever, I really mean 1916, when New York City passed its first zoning law, limiting skyscraper lot size in order to allow light to pass through the streets below. Now, that was the issue back then. Today, the issue in New York is that they just don't have enough properties to go around. But since then, several cities have taken up their own zoning requirements and zoning laws, largely implementing single-family development zones. But as we know, now we have a massive million-plus shortfall of housing in the United States. Multifamily properties are basically the only solution to that because there's not enough land to go around. They're not making any more of it. Multifamily properties in particular do a great job at increasing housing supply, but it also makes it more affordable to buy rental properties and maximize potential rental income. On top of multifamily, though, a lot of cities, specifically Minneapolis, are making a concerted effort to increase ADU zoning. So accessible dwelling units is what ADU means. This is basically a small house, you can say, that's on a single family property zone that you could also rent out to someone else. Accessory dwelling units are very helpful for offsetting your cost of living. They're also called mother-in-law suites, and it gives the homeowner a chance to offset their housing cost by getting the additional revenue by renting out that piece of property to a tenant. What's the takeaway there? Well, if you have a city like Minneapolis that is making an effort to increase ADU availability, that's a pretty pro-landlord piece of legislation, which after I just sat here and talked about all of the issues with the other states basically making it harder and harder for investors to actually be landlords in those areas, you have a place like Minneapolis that is actively looking for more landlords. Because the second you have a tenant on your ADU, you're a landlord. So really what you should be looking for is areas where zoning law constraints are being reduced. Now, there is sort of a mix up here because even California, because of their huge housing supply issue, they are also actively making it a little bit easier to build and develop properties. But California is still a long way from actually being a positive landlording state, so to speak. What you really should be looking for is places where, one, it's not overly expensive to build property. Two, the actual permitting requirements don't take multiple months just to get. For instance, my parents have a property in Asheville, North Carolina, and they're trying to build a house near a lake, and their permitting took 5 weeks. Well, why is a little lake town taking 5 weeks to permit a property? California is even worse. So you should look for places that are pretty efficient. And then on top of that, if they're allowing ADUs, that basically indicates to you that they are actively looking for more landlords. And that is a great place to be. So those are our two stories today. We'll continue to keep you updated with all of the issues in anti-landlord legislation, many of the tax rate problems that we're having, and really just the internal politics of these cities. It's been a major, major conversation in 2024, and I would assume it's going to continue as time goes on. We live in a crazy time, and it's also an election year. You can read all of these stories on the Bigger Pockets blog. You can go to biggerpockets.com/blog to read them. That is biggerpockets.com/blog. And also, if you want to read the actual articles I'm referencing today, you can find the links to those in the description below. Once again, my name is Matt Meir. I'm the managing editor of the Bigger Pockets blog. I come on this podcast every 2 weeks to give you the big stories that we're talking about. And I will see you in the next one.